This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. And I want to let you know the first part of the show is brought to you by At Home Care. And they're at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And if you're having trouble staying at home and doing your normal duties and you're no longer able to get around and do the normal things, give this number a call. It's 713-4639, or you can reach them on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. And what they'll do is they'll come in your home and take care of all the things that you no longer can take care of like you used to, and your quality of life has gone down, and you're afraid you're going to have to leave your home. Well, you won't have to, because these people will come in 24/7 and make sure that you're still able to remain in the same quality of life that you had before. Well, I have a great guest on today, and like baseball people do when they get together, we've already started arguing about things, and that's normal for baseball, because baseball is, in my opinion, the greatest game that was ever invented, and just about every kid that I know of has taken part in baseball, and it's one of those things, Pete, and I have Steve Pete Peterson on today. Of course, everybody knows Pete. If you know baseball at all, and especially MTSU baseball, you know Pete, and he has been such a great asset to our community. And Pete, I know that we're at the end of baseball season right now when you start talking about the major leagues, but you guys are just about ready to get started.
Well, Truman, we've...
Or you never finish, actually.
We never really stop. As far as coaches, you know, you just turn the page, go to the next thing. We just ended our fall practice. We ended that on Sunday. And then this week, I'm having going through final cuts, cutting the roster down to what the NCAA limits are. And I'm having individual meetings with everybody on the ball club. And now we're getting into more indoor stuff, of even though it's beautiful outside.
It is today.
But the NCAA says that you only have so many days that you can practice. And you have to do that in a consecutive period. So our consecutive number of days is up. And the number of days we were going to use. So now we're going to the weight room and trying to individually get bigger and stronger and faster. So we're in a different segment, but it just turned the page, and now you work on that. So a college athlete, really, Truman, it doesn't matter if it's baseball or whatever sport he's playing. It is 12 months a year, 365 days. I mean, if you – it's not like, and it's the same thing like in professional baseball. You talk to a guy who played in the 60s, in the 50s, in the 40s. You know, the season ended, and then you had two teams that went to the World Series. There weren't any playoffs.
And actually, it was in September back then.
And the amount of money those guys were making, there wasn't a lot of players making six figures.
Right.
You know, they were making good money as far as what normal everyday salaries were, but most of your players in the off season would find jobs because their paycheck, they weren't getting paid when they weren't playing baseball. So in the off season, they'd go, a lot of them were farmers and worked on a farm or a foundry or did did something else. And then they'd go to spring training in February and get in shape. Spring training was to get in shape and get ready. Nowadays,
call it the Grapefruit League.
Well, for example, Mike Minor, who pitches for the Braves, played at Vanderbilt. Mike went to Forest High School. Mike, for the last 2 years, you know, ever since he was done with Vanderbilt, he would, in the off season, train on our field, had a personal trainer that would train him and get him ready, and he worked year-round to prepare for the season. Michael McHenry, who's one of our former players and is catching for the Pittsburgh Pirates, Mike never stops. I mean, he's in the weight room, he's taking batting practice, he's doing this, he's doing that. You know, so they report to spring training in shape, ready to go. So, and I'm sure football and basketball, everybody's doing the same thing. You know, it's you've got a short period of time in your life to make the greatest amount of money that can possibly be made. So you don't want to miss a beat.
It seems like and we're talking about in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. It seems like the players were. You're able to relate to them a little bit better back then because they were like you, and they didn't do all, as you were saying, they didn't all do all that training during the off time, and they didn't make the money, which I find it really, when you try to compare the salaries back then and the salaries now, I know that people were not making as much money back then as they are now. But sports athletes, and we're talking about major leagues or pro football or whatever, they have really gone spiraled up over what the normal person makes now. And it seems like that it's almost, and I know most of them deserve a lot of the money that they make, but it just seems like it's just spiraled completely out of control.
Well, all you have to do is turn the television on. Mm-hmm. How many channels, you got a Major League Baseball network, you got ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN3, ESPNU, ESPN Classic. So it's sports.
Yeah,
there is constant commercials. If you go to a major league record attendance all the time, paying unbelievable money,
right?
So me and you are the reason for salaries going way up, because we're paying those cable bills. We're paying the cost of tickets and everything and all the advertisement and everything like that. So we're the reason why.
It's 24 hours a day.
It doesn't stop. And so I don't blame the player. I don't blame – he's no different than the country music singer that's going out, Garth Brooks, and whatever Garth Brooks is making per concert or any of those guys, you know, that you know, during their career, if that's what their profession – requires. Obviously a college baseball coach makes a lot more money now than what they made 50 years ago, and the same thing with a college football coach or anything like that. And you're still coaching, but the requirements or what the public says is what your job demands as far as a salary, that's what if the public's willing to pay it, you know, it goes up. So I don't fault anybody for making as much as they can, but because I look at it as it's our fault that it's happened, especially anybody who's in the public entertainment business. And if you're a professional baseball player, you are in the entertainment business.
You know, that's one thing as a boy growing up and a kid, you never forget the times that you played baseball.
Oh,
you
Lord.
Never. And I can remember we would get up games. Actually, I think 1950 is when they started having baseball teams here that were organized. But before that, I mean, we would get up games wherever we could and play on to where it's too dark to even see the ball. And I can remember when I was going to Kittrell in the grammar school, they would stop classes when the World Series was going to start. And I was a big Yankee fan back then. Mickey Mantle, I love Mickey Mantle. But they would let us listen to the radio. That was before TV. And we would get to hear, and you could hear a pin drop unless somebody did something. Mel Allen would say, "There, it's going, gone," or something like that. And, you know, that's special to all of us. And I hope that the kids now are going to have, you know, somewhere close to the same memories, because I can pick up a glove when I'm coaching, help my son coach my grandson, and just the smell of that leather, it drives me back when I was a kid.
You know, it's, you know, the thing, all right, you talk about being a Yankee fan. Well, I grew up a Yankee hater. I grew up in the city of Chicago. Got a good funny story. I lived in Chicago.
Were you a Cub or a White Sox fan?
I was a White Sox fan because the Cubs were literally, and I didn't live very far from Wrigley Field. I have been to Wrigley Field so many times, out on Waveland Avenue, catching foul balls. Ron Santo didn't live that far from me. I'd go to his house. But the Cubs lost all the time.
All the time.
And the White Sox, in the late 50s, they won the pennant in 59. They were battling the Yankees. So But they were on a really rough section of Chicago on the south side. This is before the Dan Ryan was built and everything. So it was, I didn't, unless my dad wouldn't let me go there unless I had a relative adult going with me. I can remember going to see the Yankees play, the Yankees White Sox. And man, I told my dad he's ready to get on the L and get back home. And, and I said, man, I got to see the Yankees. And you're talking about Mickey Mantle, Yogi Berra, Elston Howard, Whitey Ford, Roger Maris, all of, you know, just what a team. So I literally, Truman, they had a line of cops that formed a line, and the Yankees would file through the line and get on their bus to take them to the airport. Back then, there was no air conditioning, so the bus windows were wide open and everything. I literally crawled on my hands and knees, crawled through legs and everything to get up to the front of the line to just sit there and watch the Yankees file by and just to see those guys. All right. Now, 1964, my dad, he was in and out of work, and he got a job that transferred him to Huntsville, Alabama. I never heard of Alabama. So I go from literally a city street in Chicago to the end of a red dirt road in Alabama. First day I'm going to school. The true story. First day I'm going to school. What turns out to be one of my best friends, we're walking back home, and obviously being from Chicago, I got a northern accent at that time. And he says, he said, Peterson, you ain't nothing but a damn Yankee. And I said, that's a lie. I'm a White Sox fan. And we ended up in a fight, and I had no idea what he was talking about, and he had no idea what I was talking about. But that was the difference of what was going on in the cities. And but I couldn't stand the Yankees back then. Couldn't stand them. But I admired them so much. I admire anybody who is successful, whether in the business world or in the athletic world, year in, year out, because being on top, everybody's underneath you. And being on top is very lonely. Everybody's trying to get there to it. And the Yankees, year in, year out, just constantly were beating everybody.
And it seemed like they always had everything with class. I mean, Dan Toppin was one of the owners back then. And it seemed like that image meant a great deal to the Yankees. I mean, when you put those pinstripes on, it was special. I mean, it really was. And I don't, you probably don't remember, but when Sufferdale was, you probably remember Sufferdale in Nashville, but they had the Nashville Vols that played there. And one year, I don't know why in the world they did it, but the Yankees went on a tour and they played the Nashville Vols in a baseball game at Sufferdale. And my dad took us to that game. And I remember them coming out. And I tell you what, I don't know what my blood pressure was, but it had to have been over 200 when they came out. And I saw Mantle. There was just something unique about that guy. And he came up batting left-handed. And you know how far that center field wall was, about 450 close to it. He hit a line drive. It never did go over 10 feet high and hit that center field wall like a cannon had shot it. I have never seen anything and probably never will again. But the kid was probably, in his early 20s. Had been in his early 20s. And it was like watching, it was like being in a dream almost. And I never got to go to Yankee Stadium, and I always wanted to go to Yankee Stadium, and now it's gone.
I got to go thanks to some friends, and especially Steve Smith. But I got to go to old Yankee Stadium the last year, or the last second from the last year. They were building the new stadium. And, boy, so I went on a tour. And, of course, they had already changed the dimensions of the outfield. When when we were growing up, Yankee Stadium was 293 feet down the right field line. And the monuments were part of the field in left center. And where DiMaggio was hitting balls in left center, it was 463 feet, I think.
Yeah, it was a ton.
It was just a canyon out there. But I got to tour the whole thing, and that was quite a treat. quite a treat to be able to see Yankee Stadium. I want to get to Fenway. I haven't been to Fenway.
I hope they never tear Fenway Park down. It's one of the few left. You know, each ballpark was a shrine back then.
Yeah.
They were all different.
Yeah.
And they're not, they're starting to cookie cutter them now, and I don't really like that.
Well,
too
we
much.
We went through really cookie cutting ballparks in the late '60s and '70s, especially the Cardinals, Atlanta, and we're now, when you start looking at say Texas's ballpark mm-hmm. right now, they've got little nooks and crannies. Houston has one, you know, that are kind of going back to having their own individual statements as far as their ballparks. But mm-hmm. no, when football and baseball were sharing ballparks and they built the domes, mm-hmm. you know, just circular ballparks, they were pretty much everyone was the same.
Don't you think the media treats players and coaches different now than they do back in, the, say, the 40s and the, what I remember, the 50s and the 60s? Because you hardly ever heard any negative things about them. I mean, I know you remember Raymond Johnson and Fred
yeah,
Russell used
yeah.
to be the writers in Nashville. You know, I always felt like people need to be really complimentary of those two writers because they didn't bring out a lot of this harshness that they're picking on all the night.
Well, I think that existed in a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You know, that the negative stuff that everybody's looking to read and trying to find out something negative about a mm-hmm. certain person, whether a celebrity, mm-hmm. Is now the ongoing thing. Bucky Showalter, manager of Baltimore Orioles. I did a clinic with Bucky, and Bucky used to play for the Nashville Sounds. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me when he was coaching for the Yankees and Stump Merrill was the manager of the Yankees, mm-hmm. he said the hardest thing And Bucky was just named the manager. He was going to become the manager of the Yankees, or he just got the job. He said, the hardest thing for me to be able that I got to figure out is that I got to take care of all the media. Mm-hmm. And there's at that time, there were so many newspapers, magazines, radios, you know, everything in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I got to take care of them, satisfy them, and be able to be at batting practice every day. And you always see the manager standing behind the cage, and then have a period of time that after every game that my players and I can have a quiet period where we're by ourselves and cool off in the clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, Stump tried to do everything he could to satisfy the media, but you know, they ended up turning on the ball club. You know, and ball players are no different now than they were back then. That you know, you have a bet. You saw a little bit of it last night when the guy pitching for the Cardinals hollered out at mm-hmm. something at the hitter,
mm-hmm.
and they tried, the media immediately tried to pick up on it.
That's
and say,
baseball.
You know, yeah, you know, and that's the heat of the battle. It
yeah.
happens. It happens all the time. And you know, and but you know, the Texas player did a great job of just saying, oh, you know, that's just nothing really happened and, you know, no big deal. That's just the mm-hmm. heat of the battle. But the media is trying to shake every leaf off the tree and sell every paper and say something that's not being said in another paper or on another radio station or something like that.
It's got to be a whole lot more stressful to be a coach or a baseball player in New York because they seem to get 90% of the press, no matter what sport it is, because that's the capital of media there.
Yeah, and the Yankees are the Yankees.
Yeah.
And just think when you had the New York Giants, the New York Yankees,
mm-hmm.
the Brooklyn Dodgers, mm-hmm. you know, three.
Subway Series.
Yeah, just unbelievable ball clubs. Mm-hmm. All those great players and their – you know, supporting their teams and everything like that. And you talk to, if you talk to someone, you know, the Dodgers moved, if I'm thinking they moved in 57,
mm-hmm.
and you talk to someone who was from Brooklyn, I mean, they literally hate O'Malley. And that day mm-hmm. that Brooklyn left and went to California is one of the worst days of their life.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's Pearl Harbor. It's mm-hmm. terrible because their team left them.
Well, it's like they lost their whole family because
yeah.
the Brooklyn Dodgers, I mean, they were one of the most rabid group of fans that I've ever seen. Couldn't understand a word they were saying, but I mean, it was unbelievable.
Did you watch the game last night?
It was the first game I missed last night.
Golly, man. They're showing Nolan Ryan, who's the president of the Texas Rangers.
Oh, what a 7 no-hitters. Unbelievable.
What a competitor. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I mean, it's getting, you know, it's the ninth inning. Mm-hmm. And the worst thing could happen, Texas walks the guy. Mm-hmm. You know, and then he's throwing a ball all over the place, but mm-hmm. he's throwing it 98, and he's throwing a nasty breaking ball. Mm-hmm. And when he does get it over, nobody can hit it. Mm-hmm. And you could just feel the tension in the ballpark. They're showing women crying and managers grabbing their caps and this and that. And it's just tremendous, tremendous tension in that ballpark that was – and it's just a ball game.
Yeah.
And but it's baseball, and it just meant so much to – so many people's lives, but I could feel it happening. And you got two different styles of managers. Mm-hmm. Washington with Texas is so outgoing and mm-hmm. doesn't hold anything back. Mm-hmm. You got La Russa, who's got a little bit of arrogance
tight
lip and doesn't want to really show much, mm-hmm. like a lot of baseball people are, because, you know, the thing is, you know, the game is a monotonous game that goes on and on and on. It's like life, and, you know, so you can't
get too – it's like sitting in heaven, though.
Yeah, you can't get up. You can't get too down because, you know, you could be the hero in this game and the goat in the next one. So it's just different what you see. Probably the most relaxed people out there were the ones playing.
But, you know, baseball is a traditional game. Baseball mirrors – the United States more than anything else I know of. And I know you've seen the movie Field of Dreams.
Oh, many times.
When James Earl Jones is talking about, you know, what baseball has meant to this country. And it's the one constant in this country, like you and I were talking about earlier, where when they designed baseball to be a sport, it was probably the most perfect design you could ever have because the bases and everything will remain the same distance, and they were able to relate that to, even as generations get faster and bigger and all that, it's still the perfect venue.
1816, Alexander Cartwright is the person that invented the game of baseball. Mm-hmm. Abner Doubleday gets all the credit, but it really was Alexander Cartwright. Mm-hmm. And for some unknown reason, I have no idea, but he figured out that the base paths were 90 feet. Mm-hmm. It was a 90-foot square. Mm-hmm. And it is, and it's never changed. Now, the mound has changed as far as the distance of the mound to home plate. But somehow he figured out that the true test of a ground ball to an infielder and a fast guy running out of the batter's box, a true test was at 90 feet. And how he came up with that, because I know they didn't have stopwatches and all that stuff, but to this day, it's, you know, for a shortstop to say that he can get a fast runner, you know, 90 feet is it, you mm-hmm. know. And it's so yes, it's a game that has that I can remember. You know, I talked to some of our old alumni, mm-hmm. and I'll talk to guys that played back in the 30s. And they played at MTSU, and mm-hmm. and they say, well, you know, I was pretty fast back then, but I couldn't play now. I couldn't be on your team now. I said, wait a minute now. I said, if you were fast back then, you'd be fast now. Mm-hmm. And I said, just because you're not a real big guy, I said, there's little guys that are exceptional ball players to this day mm-hmm. in the big leagues. Mm-hmm. Okay, look at the second baseman for Boston Red Sox.
Oh yeah.
You know, if you had power. You know, there might not have been a fence back then, but I guarantee you, if you could hit it a long ways, it'd go over the fence now. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's much easier to relate to baseball than it is maybe to basketball or football, because obviously, just going back to when I played high school football, the size of players are just – I mean,
twice
they're
as big
huge.
As we were. Yeah.
They're huge. And the game is so much faster. Basketball players are so much taller mm-hmm. and stuff like that. That, you know, I can see where it might be real hard to relate to somebody who played in the 30s and 40s and 50s in other sports. But baseball, it's pretty easy. You know, I mean, if you were good in your era, you'd still be good now.
And I think that's one reason that a lot of us can relate to baseball. And but playing the game, I know we all probably envision ourselves out there at shortstop, and you know, they make a lot of money. There's no doubt about that. And you know, it's argumentative of where they're making too much or whatever. But I still believe that the real baseball players play for the love of the game. And you were in a town where one of my favorite baseball players outside the Yankees played, and he was a pure baseball player, and he played shortstop for the Chicago Cubs, is Ernie Banks. And I can always I always remember that was one of his key statements. I'd rather play a doubleheader any day than one game.
Here's a neat thing, and I say this to my players. Okay, the average minimum salary in the big leagues, I think, is about $450,000 a year. Mm-hmm. Okay, most of everybody who's on that bench on that team throughout the course of the year, they're all millionaires. Mm-hmm. Okay, and most of them are multimillionaires. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll make more money than you and I'll spend in our lifetime and our children's lifetime. Mm-hmm. At the end of the World Series, what happens? They run out of the winning team runs out of the dugout and piggy piles mm-hmm. on top of each other, mm-hmm. putting shaving cream and mm-hmm. what have you in each other's
faces. And
they're
kids again.
They're acting like little bitty kids, mm-hmm. all for the ring, mm-hmm. all for it to be because they're the very best. And they're millionaires. Mm-hmm. They're going to make the same money regardless. But that thrill of being the World Series champion, and when you meet a guy who's got a World Series ring, boy, he's proud of it.
Oh gosh!
Oh,
yes.
It's just believe me, the you see somebody with a ring from back in the 40s and 50s and 60s versus somebody who's got a ring now. Obviously, that ring back then is not as big, and the mm-hmm. one they got now could be a satellite dish. Mm-hmm. It's so big, but the pride factor of I played on the 1962. World champions, and I play. I mean, you could just, you know, because there's just so many people that get rings.
And we think of men are out there playing a kids' game,
yep.
but it's actually kids out there playing a kids'
exactly
game because sometimes we forget that they are young people
off the lines, away mm-hmm. from the field. It's a business.
Yeah,
but when you cross that line, it's still a game.
We're going to take a quick break and let you know that part of the show is brought to you by Pirtle and Howerton Automotive. And they're at 2006 North Main Street in Shevaville. And it's about a 15-minute drive. And just before you get into downtown Shevaville, it's on your left. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, that is the place to go. I'll guarantee you, you can go in there, have yourself a great time talking with the people there. They're some of the friendliest that I have ever run into, and actually enjoy going up there and talking to them and having a cup of coffee. And once you go out and take a look at some of the inventory that they have here, I guarantee you, you'll find something that you will enjoy. They'll let you take a ride in it, and after you get through taking a ride in it, bring it back and park it, you'll be driving it all the way back to Murfreesboro, and I'll guarantee you, you'll be glad you're gone.
You've known him for years. Now you can visit with him every day. It's The Truman Show, continuing right now on WGNS, AM and FM.
HGTV, the leader in home design and know-how, has joined Shaw Floors, the leader in flooring and city tile and floor covering, the largest flooring retailer in our area, to bring you HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw Collection. Doug Young with City Tile.
Come to City Tile and see the new selections of the HGTV products exclusively at City Tile.
Your HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw authorized retailer. Visit citytile.net. City Tile and Floor Covering.
This is Steve Grimsley with Zippy Shell. Are you looking for storage? Perhaps you're preparing your home for sale, downsizing, or just in need of some extra space. Well, then you should give us a call. We offer convenient, affordable storage solutions right here in Rutherford County. We deliver a storage container to you, you pack it, and we'll pick it up and store your goods in our secure facility. We are locally owned and operated. To check out our grand opening specials, give us a call at 216-7879 or visit us at zippyshell.com. Save time, save money, save everything.
Hello, this is Jim Bryan at First Bank.
And I'm Chuck Lewis.
First Bank presents Good Neighbor Events, news of what our local schools, churches, and community groups are doing.
It's Tuesday, October the 25th, and that revival continues tonight and tomorrow night at 6 o'clock over at the Barfield Baptist Church. And that's at 1033 Barfield Church Road. Evangelist Terry Wilkerson is the special speaker. 6 o'clock tonight and tomorrow night at Barfield Baptist Church. Now, in the morning, the 4th annual Art is the Movement, sponsored by Read to Succeed. This is over at the Patterson Community Center at 1030 in the morning. The conference is tuition-free and open to all 9th through 12th grade students in Rutherford County public, private, and home schools. Starts at 10:30 in the morning at the Patterson Community Center. The Siegel Stars softball team is hosting a pasta dinner and silent auction to raise funds for their upcoming season. That's 5 until 7 Thursday night. And also Thursday night at 6, the Murfreesboro Symphony Orchestra will host Romancing the Movies. This is over at First United Methodist Church on Thompson Lane. The tickets may be purchased at the door. They start at $10. And here's another kind of music Thursday night, 7:30, a tribute to the Beatles, at the Art Center of Cannon County in neighboring Woodbury. And Sunday is the Heart Walk over at Middle Tennessee Medical Center. The activities start at 1 o'clock Sunday, and the Heart Walk's at 3. I'm humbled to be the Heart Walk honoree this year, as a result of that triple bypass surgery I had this past June. The Heart Walk not only raises money, it also raises awareness for this number one killer of adult males and females in America. And I'll tell you firsthand, we are so fortunate to have a faith-based facility like St. Thomas Heart right here. Good Neighbor Events brought to you by First Bank.
WeatherEye.
We'll see sunny skies here for this afternoon and a high near 78 degrees and south winds around 5 to 10 miles per hour. For tonight, mostly clear skies and a low near 50. I'm WGNS meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Right now, 75.
At Todd's Complete Auto Care on Southeast Broad Street, we now have a European specialist on staff. Now you don't have to go to the dealer for service and repair on Mercedes, BMW, Volvo, Jaguar, and other Europeans. From oil changes to engine work, we can take care of it on foreign, domestic, and European vehicles. 962-9050.
He knows Rutherford County, and he knows the people of Rutherford County. Truman Jones, here on WGNS AM and FM.
Today's guest, MTSU baseball coach Steve Peterson.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Blue Restaurant and Bar, located at the Jackson Heights Plaza. They have something for everyone on their menu, from steaks, fresh seafood, pastas, salads, appetizers, and special items unique to Blue. They have 6 items for lunch at just $6. Enjoy their Sunday live brunch beginning at 10 a.m. with music from Larry Pinkerton and Avant Lane. Whether it's enjoying the courtyard at dinner, the game on the big screen TVs, or piano music Friday and Saturday evenings, there's something for everyone at Blue. Blue Restaurant and Bar, located in the Jackson Heights Plaza. Be sure to visit their website at blue-restaurant.com. That's Blue Restaurant and Bar's owners, Marty Brown and Greg Pogue. Before we get back into sports, I just want to let you know, and we were talking about this off the air, you came from Chicago, and I know you've got a lot of fond memories from Chicago. That's where you grew up and your family. But I have been to Chicago a couple of times, and it is the cleanest, nicest looking, safest big town that I have ever been to, and I've been to all of them. It's amazing how things have evolved into what they are now.
Well, I would agree with you, and you really don't notice that or see all that when you're living there or growing up in it. Mm-hmm. I was too young to really pay any attention to it. But having gone back, all my relatives are gone now from there. But going back to visit, I remember I took my son the last game. I moved when I was 14, so mm-hmm. that was the last time I was at Wrigley Field. I took my son when he was 14 years old to Wrigley Field, and it really hit me how clean everything was and everything like that. And you can't say that about big cities or even small cities.
No.
But Chicago is a clean, safe place, and I know baseball will take me back there, whether it's recruiting or conventions and stuff like that. And you know, nobody's really worried about walking around at night in downtown Chicago mm-hmm. and going down State Street or anything like that, or Lakeshore Boulevard. And you know, you feel, you know, it's windy, mm-hmm. and you better carry a jacket.
Oh, yeah.
You know, especially if it's in the winter.
Wintertime, it'll eat you Ooh, alive. Lord. Now, I really thank a lot of you, Pete, and you do a lot not only for MTSU, which, of course, they're having their centennial this year, and I know you haven't been there the whole 100 years. Probably feel like it
well,
sometimes.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
But you always bring in the community as far as letting them know what's going on, and you have two big fundraisers a year, mm-hmm. and you've already had one, and then you'll have another one come Groundhog Day and have a nice meal. And I don't think I've ever missed one of those because I've always got to hear what your prediction is going to be for
the groundhogs.
The groundhogs.
Don't blame me now.
Did you shoot that groundhog?
No, Tommy Wheeler did.
Oh, okay.
Tommy Wheeler was the one that the first groundhog was donated to us by through the MTSU biology department. Mm-hmm. And he got so
he died a natural
well,
death.
Well, we still have him entombed in a case, but his legs fell off and his eyes were falling out, and we had to do something. And so Tommy Wheeler came up with Raider 2.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy Wheeler used to have a market down on
Las Casas
Pike on mm-hmm. the right there. Mm-hmm. Tommy, big supporter of MTSU and MTSU baseball, and I could – if we had lost three or four in a row, Tommy'd call me up. He said, "You better come down here and get your lucky bologna." And he'd fix me a bologna sandwich. It seemed like we'd win two or three. But so Raider 2, I don't know the exact year, but this is my 25th year as a head coach. So my 25th year of having to interpret the groundhog dreams. And how that evolved, I have no idea. I think it really started when we made that decision that we had to do something to improve the stadium. And the way college baseball was going, we were having success and winning our share of ball games. But the SEC, you know, your bigger conferences, back then we were in the OVC.
Mm-hmm.
I cut my teeth coaching in the OVC. And we had improved our facility. Coach Stanford did a great job of improving it. We first collegiate field in the state of Tennessee to have lights.
Mm-hmm.
We were the first ballpark in the OVC to fence it in and charge admission,
mm-hmm.
Put a press box in, all that stuff. But the SEC, you know, they started building the stadiums and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So we decided we had to do something, and we started trying to raise money. So we would just come up with some cockamamie ideas of how we could raise money and mm-hmm. do this and that. The first big fundraising thing was to build our clubhouse, mm-hmm. an indoor training center, and our locker room, everything that's there. And we did that. We raised the money there. I think we finished raising the money in 95 and eventually got in the building in 97 or 98.
Mm-hmm.
Then we started chair backing the old stadium and selling seats. And I can remember telling Lee Fowler, who was the athletic director at that time, he said, "Well, you're going to finish off chair backing the whole stadium." I said, "No, nope, we're not going to do any more."
Mm.
I said, "Because we're going to have to grandfather in what we've got." He said, "Grandfather in to what?"
Mm-hmm.
I said, "We're going to build a new stadium." And he kind of chuckled and he said, "Now, who's this we?" And I said, "Well, MTSU." I said, "But it's no sense trying to keep putting sugarcoat it,
mm-hmm.
you know, we've got to do something, you know, because we're going to fall behind real quick
mm-hmm.
As far as facilities." So that was probably the late 90s when we started really thinking in big time terms there. Mm-hmm. Then when we went to the Sun Belt, we could see real quick that the Sun Belt, the stadiums were already being built mm-hmm. or had already been built, and we had to do something. Mm-hmm. And golly, when Roger Haley, bless old Roger Haley, when
he's a good
he
one.
Made the investment mm-hmm. and he said, "Pete, we're making an investment.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna keep this spring fling in Murfreesboro,
mm-hmm.
but we got to invest in MTSU to improve its facilities." And he said, "We're gonna build the track complex." He said, "I want you to come to this luncheon mm-hmm. and listen to it." And I said, "Well, Roger, we got practice. I don't need to do this."
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't say anything about what he was going to do for baseball. You know, he said, well, you need to come. You need to come. So anyway, I came. And then that afternoon, he said, and we're going to invest $5.5 million into MTSU athletics. $3.5 million of it is going to build the track complex mm-hmm. and soccer complex. Mm-hmm. And he said, then we're going to give Pete $2 million to see if he can do anything to get the baseball thing going. And, Lord, I gave him a big hug after that. And that's what got it going. Then Dr. McPhee got behind it. Mm-hmm. We just hired Chris Massaro, and mm-hmm. he turned it into a capital project, first athletic capital campaign project that's ever in the history of the university. And we had the next Groundhog Day we had. We raised $750,000.
Wow.
Dwan Brazelton flew in from Tampa, you know, number one draft pick.
One of your baseball
players. He writes a check for $250,000. Mm-hmm. Other very prominent people in Murfreesboro, you know, the emotion just got to swelling. Mm-hmm. And it was a good time to raise money. I mean, it was a great time to raise mm-hmm. money because the economy was going great. It was a bad time to hire people to work because everybody was working. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, they were making big money, and yeah. the price of steel and aluminum and everything was sky high. But through the people, all I say is I was the will. I kept it mm-hmm. in the forefront. I kept it in people's eyes all the time. Mm-hmm. But we got the right people to provide a way. And so through private donations, we built a beautiful stadium that satisfies our needs. And it's something that the next AD and president, when it needs to be enlarged, can easily be enlarged. And that day will come someday. Mm-hmm. But it's as good as any facility in the Sun Belt. And Chris Massaro made sure to have the design set that if I can produce him a good enough team and we're ranked high enough in the NCAA, he can put the money out to get an NCAA event here.
It is one of the most beautiful baseball stadiums that I've seen. There's very few baseball stadiums in the country, collegiate stadiums, that are comparable to yours.
Well, there's some beautiful ones.
Yeah, they are.
You know, and it represents baseball. You know, you know, a guy said, well, aren't you proud for MTSU? I said, yeah, but I'm proud for baseball. Mm-hmm. You know, that going back to, you know, the guy who played in the 30s and 40s and 50s, mm-hmm. you know, and stuff like that, you know, I said, you know, the baseball field, they tell me in the 30s used to be over here, but since 1950-something, this is home plate. Mm-hmm. And if you stood at home plate now, you're standing at home plate back in the 90s and 80s and mm-hmm. 70s and 60s, it's the same plus spot. I know the surroundings have changed, so it's a statement to baseball. That's what it is. It's a statement to baseball, and it's a feather in the cap to MTSU and everyone that took part of it. And I'm talking about the guy that gave me $10, $100, $1,000, or the one that you know everybody contributed in mm-hmm. some way, and that's how the stadium was built.
Is that a big plus when you're out recruiting?
Sure is.
I thought it would be.
It's kind of like driving up in a Cadillac or old broken down, I won't say what model, or old broken down Cadillac. You know, it's, you know, images, mm-hmm. shininess has a lot to do with it. It's still the same game. You still got to be able to throw it. You got to catch it. You got to field it. You got to hit it. But being able to play, Truman, you know, it's one thing when you were growing up to play in the backyard mm-hmm. or in a field that you put together yourself.
Taped your bat.
Yeah. But then when you got to put a uniform on
mm-hmm.
it.
Different.
It was different.
The first uniform I wore, I was a Yankee here in Murfreesboro and one of the first team. And guess what I did the first day I got my uniform? My mom fixed it up for me. And I got on my bicycle and rode up and down the street so everybody could see me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm just saying, that's the difference of mm-hmm. having a really nice... And you know the difference of when you go mm-hmm. get on an infield at the... Golly, me and you can remember when we hardly played on grass infields.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're all skin, onion mm-hmm. fields. Mm-hmm. And then when you went to that grass infield. I can remember the first time in college that we went to Florida State to play. Mm-hmm. And Florida State was a great facility back then, but it's nothing like it was now. But it was just manicured. Mm-hmm. It was just I thought, man, I could sleep here. Having that shiny new stadium, it sure does help in recruiting. It makes a statement. It says, this is what MTSU thinks about their baseball program. This is what Dr. McPhee, this is what Chris Massaro, the ones that make the decision, this is what they think of their baseball program.
How do you find your recruits? Because there's so many baseball teams, so many different ages and levels of kids playing baseball. At what point do you start looking at a kid, and do you get it from referrals or from coaches? And I know a lot of the kids are going to be looking at MTSU because you've been so successful, and it's a great venue to play in, and it's a great city to come to. So you've got a lot of pluses, but the biggest plus, of course, is going to be you, because you have been successful, and you do have a great personality, and you have a reputation of being a player's coach. What do you actually look for?
Well, first of all, word of mouth is a great way to recruit. There's all kind of recruiting services, but I don't know how much we really depend on that. We get out and see players. Mm-hmm. Believe me, in the 30-something years I've been coaching in college, no father, no mother, no grandfather has ever called me up and says, my son can't play or my grandson can't play, but... You know, would you come see him play or this mm-hmm. or that? You know, so I listen to everybody. When they call me up about a player, I write the name down. We can't see everybody. The first thing that attracts me to a player is obviously his abilities. Mm-hmm. Okay? And if he has the abilities of what I'm looking for, whether it's an infielder, can he run, can he catch a ball, his arm strength, stuff like that. If he's a pitcher, obviously, does he have an out pitch? Does he have a good breaking ball? Does he have arm strength? Will his arm work properly, mm-hmm. or is he just a train wreck ready to happen? So you get attracted to just their athletic ability. Mm-hmm. Then you look at their body, and you project. Let's say I see him when he's a junior in high school. Mm-hmm. You look at him, and there's little things you can look at. You can look at the size of his ankles. Mm-hmm. If he's got thin ankles, chances are he's going to be a good runner. Mm-hmm. If he's got big old thick ankles, he better be a third baseman, catcher, you know, first baseman. You know, things like that. Mm-hmm. So you try to project, and the longer you do it, you make comparisons of quality players that you had in the past. Mm-hmm. Then you try to find out, for me, the next thing I'm going to look for after I'm interested in their athletic abilities is their grades. Mm-hmm. And it could stop right there. If they're not much of a student, if I can't predict out that this young man is going to be academically eligible, it's a waste of my time. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to fool with it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to be a genius. He doesn't have to make straight A's. But I want somebody that's going to make a commitment to me that he's going to try to finish what he started. And if he maintains eligibility, what the NCAA says it takes for him to play each season, then he's going to consistently work towards his degree. And by his senior year, he's going to walk in my office and say, "Coach, I'm just 12 hours away." Mm-hmm. You know, you're looking at a guy that was just like that, because getting an education was not very important to mm-hmm. me. Playing baseball was.
Yeah.
So that carrot, my dad dangled that carrot in front of me. He didn't put baseball on a pedestal. He put it on like a carrot. Mm-hmm. And he'd say, "Son, you want to play ball today? You want to play in that little league game? You better make sure you get the gutters clean. You better make sure the grass gets cut." You know. Mm-hmm. So he was always dangling that carrot. And the same thing was when I went to college, signed a scholarship, you know. But he had to pay for part of the education. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Son," he said, "the bottom line is not many Petersons have got educations." Mm-hmm. So he said, "I've saved money up. The most important thing is you get your education. And I could care less about baseball. If you want to play baseball, fine and dandy. Don't come back complaining to me about it, but I will get on you about your grades." So I look for the family commitment. When I visit, then if it gets past that, then I'm gonna come to Truman Jones's house, and I want to see how you interact with your family.
Right.
You know, how respectful you are to your mother, your father, your brothers, your sisters.
Good
see
for
that.
You.
I like to see that because I'm gonna take you away from that environment, and now you got to get on campus and you got to act right. You got to act right away from mama and daddy. And the way I was raised, my mother, she would say, you know, son, it's bad enough to screw up at home, but woe unto you if you go over to somebody else's house and mess up. So it's kind of like leave something in better shape than what you found it. So then after they, you know, you check all that out, then you try to put an offer together. And if you've got three good catchers, chances are you're going to pass over on a good catcher. You just can't. If you got a brand new car, you're not going to buy another car.
That's what I was going to ask you. You're going to be recruiting for your specific needs.
Yeah, yeah.
But in some cases, you'll have an athlete that's just so good and can just really just fit in anywhere except for maybe catcher.
Right. You know, finding those guys like when I coached in junior college, as far as position players, it seemed like all I ever signed was shortstops. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, first day of practice, I'd say, okay, head out to your position. And there'd be 10 shortstops. And they're all looking around at each other. Mm-hmm. You know, before it's all over with, one becomes a center fielder, one becomes a left fielder, third baseman. You put, you know, that's the trained eye, what he's got to do. And you want to, baseball people, you want to get the best bats in the lineup. Mm-hmm. You want to score runs, but you got to be good up the middle. And there is, I tell my catchers, pass balls are not allowed. It's part of the scorebook, but it is unallowable. And if you think it's going to be allowed, you know, you're not going to be a catcher. So your defense starts behind the plate. Then you got to go to your shortstop, your second baseman, your center fielder. So those are the real skill guys that have to cover a lot of ground, have a good arm, do that. Obviously, then you go to your pitchers. So your money's going up the middle. And then your slower guys that, you know, trying to get bats in the lineup, you know, you get them in left field and right field and third and first. Obviously, you want everybody to play defense.
Right.
Now, you can have all that, but if you don't have much pitching, you know, what do they say? You're never out of a game if you got power. You're always in a game if you got pitching.
Right.
You know, if you got pitching, it's a 1-0 ball game, and you got a chance to win. So pitching and defense – when I played, you played, whoever's played, it is still the name of the game, pitching and defense. And then if you can put it all together. So through the recruiting process, then you got to remember how much money you got available. All of Division I, it doesn't matter if it's MTSU, University of Tennessee, Lipscomb, Arizona State, all Division I can do is offer 11.7 scholarships.
Wow.
So we deal in percentages. Mm-hmm. Football and basketball, they deal in headcount. They only give full scholarships. We give partials. The minimum partial we can give is 25%. We can give a full, but if I gave out 11 fulls and then one guy 70%, that's only 12 ball players. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm playing five times a week, so I need five starting pitchers. I need a bullpen. I got to have two catchers. Infielders, outfielders, an extra outfielder, extra infielder. So, you know, you got in college baseball, you got a lot of guys that aren't receiving anything through athletics. You know, they're walk-ons. Mm-hmm. They might receive money through the lottery, might receive academic aid, might receive financial aid through the government. But there's a lot of, you're only allowed to have 35 people on the team, which is enough. You know, that's fine, but it does make it difficult because you might have a freshman that you would love to develop and keep him on the ball club, but the NCAA says, nope, you can only have 35. And that's a gender equity issue that of how many athletes stay involved. And then only 27 of those 35 can receive any type of athletic aid. So there's all kind of restrictions that are placed upon the college coach and everything.
35 in some ways sounds like ample, but in other ways it doesn't. Now, do you utilize your pitchers the way they do in baseball, where the pitcher only throws so many pitches, and then they start going into their bullpen, which to me, that's a little bit opposite of what I used to remember, because usually you wanted your pitcher to go all the way if he possibly could, until he just became arm sore or whatever.
When you and I played, the best pitcher started, and then the second best guy came in, and the third best guy. In other words, the bullpen were your worst pitchers.
Right.
That's not the case anymore. Yes, I'm very concerned about taking care of my pitcher's arms. So we keep pitch counts, but there's a lot more involved in it than just counting how many pitches. It has a lot to do with rest. It has a lot to do with how much throwing conditioning you're able to do, your athleticism. Some guys they recover quicker, you know. But yeah, I'm very, very careful, and as careful as you are, and as great a job as you try to do recruiting, you can't cut somebody open and see their heart. You can't. No. You can't coach what's between their ears.
No.
You know, you can't put. I can put my hands on their arms and their legs, but the intangibles you can't see.
We're going to take a quick break and let you know that the last part of the show is brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive, where they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. And for a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And only at Stan McNabb's, when you buy a car from them, do you get free oil changes and tires for the life of that vehicle.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
He knows Rutherford County's past, and his wisdom can give good insight into our future. It's the Truman Show. Here again, Truman Jones.
And welcome back with Steve Pete Peterson. And we need to say a few words about the Hall of Fame inductees.
This weekend, what a great honor that we've got. We got five former Blue Raiders that are going into the Blue Raider Hall of Fame. Raymond Bonner, great football player, trackster from the late 60s, early 70s. Mudcat Brewer, who I coached from 91 through 95. Great ball player from Smyrna. Dad was a dairy farmer out there, and family still owns land out there.
A lot of good athletes came out of there.
Mudcat coached at Blackman. I think he's assistant principal there now, and then he signed with the Colorado Rockies after he played for me. But he's going in the Hall of Fame. Jackie Brown. I'm saying her first name wrong. Jacques. Anyway, Prince. Brown, trackster. She's going in. Kelly Potter, great kicker for Boots back in the early 80s. And Terry Sweeney, who Jack Deere used to tell me story after story about Terry Sweeney, football trackster. He's going in, played back in the 50s and 60s. Friday night is Jim Simpson, who runs the curator of the Hall of Fame. He said it's completely sold out, but the actual induction on Saturday is free to the public. It's going to be beautiful weather. It's going to be on the backyard, the back lawn of the Hall of Fame, right before the football game. So each inductee will be able to talk and say words. So invite everybody to come out.
Oh, that'll be a fun time.
It's a great, great event.
Need to go out and support these people because they've meant a lot to the university.
They're heroes.
Yes, they are. Well, Pete, season starts in February.
Yep, You're supposed to be just getting ready in February, and we got to be playing in that.
How do you get them ready to play in such inclement weather in February?
Well, that's why we built an indoor facility. you bundle up.
Mm-hmm.
You get yourself in the best shape you can, and we got places that we can pitch inside and hit inside. You know, we don't have to. Sometimes, some winters, you got to deal with snow, but we just have to deal with cold weather, and it's miserable. You know,
and when you're playing baseball, it's hard to play in cold weather. Yeah, it really is.
You know, you can't wear all the clothes and everything like that. But
bat stings.
But like in the Bible, it says this too shall pass, and that bad weather passes, and then it gets, the breezes start blowing out, and golly, Reese Smith Field becomes a launching pad out to right field, and pitchers got to really learn to keep it down, and it really gets exciting late March and April, and the weather gets good, and we start packing them in.
When can they start buying their season tickets?
I would imagine ticket sales go on as soon as when we come back to school in January, mm-hmm. and then Groundhog Day when we have that lunch and it really kicks in. But I would say that you in January is when they first go on sale. I know the schedule went out a few weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
so we're getting all the contracts back on that, and so. We've got a great schedule. We've got most home games we've had in a long time. I think about 33, 34 home games. So invite everybody to come out, enjoy it, and always have a lot of Tennessee guys, Middle Tennessee guys, and names that you'll recognize.
Everybody come out and support your Blue Raiders because it's one of the best deals in town, and you can't go anywhere and have a better time and support a better person than Steve Peterson. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
Truman, this has been fun.
Always fun with you.